Evening. Welcome to Laughing Monkey Music Show 2. I'm John Hamm. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. People might know John from Agalloch, but John also has a great solo career, got a lot of good solo music, and he's in a couple other bands too. We're gonna kind of dig into both. But we're gonna end. John's got a new album coming out, which is awesome. His third. But the people that aren't familiar, I want to step back, and it was really important to have you on because I think when I first heard The Mantle years back when it first came out, as I was saying earlier, the internet wasn't as ripe as it was for information. I just saw the album cover. It was kind of mysterious, and I was like, it was something I hadn't heard before. It was fantastic. I was like, this is brilliant. So at that point, you guys had been a couple for a couple of years already in creating your sound. So at that point, maybe we can step back a little bit in how you guys got together a little bit and the culmination of the sound, because the sound of your band is kind of original, especially at that point. I don't think there was a lot going on like that.
This would have been mid-90s. And so yeah, I was very much trying to come up with a style. I wanted to start a band that had a style that was very different than what was going on in the US at the time. And I was really, really influenced by what was going on in Europe, specifically Sweden, Norway, that sound back then. And so, I started just writing music when I was living in Seattle on my four track. And through a mutual friend, I met Don in early 1996. And I'd already known Jason from 1992 when I lived in Montana, because he's also from Montana, as well as Shane Breyer. So I had a bunch of, there were people around in my friend group that were kind of on the same page, especially Shane, because he was a tape trader that he got me into a lot of the cool stuff, like In the Woods and Ulver and those kind of bands that became very influential later. So I had this project in mind, and I remember talking to Shane about it and Jason, and they seemed to think it was a really cool thing. So when I was writing the music, I came out in Seattle. I had some demos that I had been working on, and when I met Don, I showed him what I had been working on, because he was also doing a project called Sculptured at the time. And I really liked what he was doing, and I liked the fact that he was a really like kind of shreddy guitarist. And because I really wanted to have some sort of like Arcturus style solos on this demo that I was making.
What did he sound like at that point? Like his band, what did that band sound like at that point?
It was like Swedish style death metal, kind of melodic, Dark Tranquillity-ish kind of stuff, which was very exciting to me because I didn't really know anyone else who was into that stuff, let alone producing that kind of
It was still
music.
pretty fresh back then too, coming out in the US. I do remember that time period. It was very fresh.
And like, so, when I met him, he was recording bass on an album by a band called Landfill from here in Portland. And I was friends with Steve-O from Landfill. So I just came down to the studio and Don was there, and I show up, I'm wearing a leather jacket with like an Entombed pin and a Nocturnus shirt. And he's like, "Who the fuck is this guy?" And it's like, we just started talking and realized that we had a lot in common musically. And so we just started hanging out, and I would show him my demos. He would show me his demos, and we weren't really in a band together at that point. We were just friends. But, I asked him, "Hey, would you be interested in playing some solos on this demo I'm making?" And he was like, "Sure." So at that point, he was kind of just a session guy, because he didn't have any intention of joining Agalloch at the time. He wanted to pursue Sculptured and just whatever. So that's how we kind of got together. And I was very influenced by bands like In the Woods, Ulver, Dissection, Catatonia, but we were also very We were both into a lot of stuff like Fields of the Nephilim and Sisters of Mercy and Love Like Blood and like gothic kind of bands. We were into like neo folk stuff like Current 93 and Death in June at the time. So we
Is
all
there
had.
any jazz in there? I'm sorry. Is there actually anybody that jazz? Because I swear to God, when I listen to your music, I think I'm hearing guitar jazz transitions. And maybe it's just in my head because I listen to some jazz.
Don. Don's a jazz guy. He's definitely into jazz.
It just feels like the chording's different at times that you don't normally hear.
Well, here's the
Obviously,
thing.
mine's just different, you know.
Yeah, here's the other thing that a lot of people don't know is like, in addition to all of those like metal influences that we had and goth influences we had, like my favorite band is Rush. So I was,
That totally makes sense to me now.
yeah. And so it's like I'm writing like this sort of dark metal music with a kind of a Rush style musical foundation. And Don was heavily influenced by Steely Dan. So that Rush
Okay,
and Steely
there you
Dan
go.
influence was creeping in also in addition to like the Ulver and In the Woods influence. So that I
That
think
makes
that right there kind of separated us a bit from other bands, you know, because we were bringing already at that point at the demo stage, we were pulling from non-metal sources. So
Were you planning at that point to start? Because, and people aren't following. This is kind of also kind of a cheater's version of the band because it's the deep history. You guys weren't actually playing out at that point. Did you have any plans to play out at that point? Because it wasn't like you like we're gonna
no.
do a rock band. It's like we're gonna be a grunge band at the time. It was a grunge is popular time. Like whatever the band was, a shoegaze. It's like we're gonna do the Who. We're gonna do this. Like you weren't that band. You were like write your own music, and you're writing it. You're laying it down, and you really had no other goals of covers or playing out, right?
No.
And then just like clarify for me. So I feel like you had your own vision, and that was
Yeah.
just record your music and.
Exactly. I mean, especially
Bit
back then,
different.
it was really difficult to find musicians in Portland that weren't, you know, junkies or basically just into war metal or thrash metal. You know, there was, so we kind of existed on our own little island in terms of like the local scene. And we were largely unknown by the local scene because we weren't sociable and we didn't play out, we didn't play live. It was really when Jason joined, it was technically just the three of us as the core musicians, and I was playing drums and guitar, so we couldn't really play live without a drummer.
Now, was that something you learned prior to the band? Were you like one of those multi-instrumentalists younger? Or did you like, oh, you know, we need a drummer and I'm pretty good at it type of deal? Or you're like, I got this.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a multi-instrumentalist since probably 1989 when my drums was my first instrument, and then I learned guitar just so I could write guitar or write songs to my drum patterns. And then, you know, I can play bass and I can sing, and then I later picked up piano. So I'm like definitely very, you know, multi-instrumentalist, and I have been since I was a teenager.
Okay.
So it was very easy for us to just be a studio band, and I would just
Oh
play
yeah.
drums. Yeah.
And especially being a Steely Dan fan, with you know, you'd be a great the biggest studio band in the world, Steely Dan. You know? So
Yeah,
there's
I know.
already that influence right there.
Yeah, and that was the other thing is like, you know, back then, you know, black metal bands didn't necessarily have to play live. You could just record an album, put it out there, be mysterious, and it was cool. Like mystery.
And you were a mystery because, like I said, when I first heard you know, actually maybe the Pale Folklore, like there was nothing out there. I just heard there was two guys in it, and they worked on it sometimes. I don't even remember what I heard at the time, and it was very mysterious. Didn't know what you looked like, do nothing,
Yeah.
which kind of plays into the mystery of the band and probably helped it on some level because you just
Yeah,
don't know
because
what to compete with. You know what I mean? They're like, well, this is nothing like it. Like out there.
yeah, exactly. And we, you know, we were essentially unintentionally playing hard to get in terms of like, you know, people trying to figure us out. And honestly, I wanted to continue that. You know, I didn't want Agalloch to be this widely known band. I wanted it to be this mysterious cult band. And then we signed to the End Records, and all of that went down the toilet because they wanted us to do interviews. They wanted us to start playing live. They wanted us to promote. I mean, they were very much a you need to go door to door and sell your music kind of label. And we were just like, fuck that. So there was a lot of butting heads, especially between me and Andreas from the End Records back then. You know, because I didn't want to do interviews. I hated doing interviews. We didn't play live. We just wanted to make records, put them out there, and then, you know, leave us alone.
Well, I appreciate you being much more personable now for this interview, so thank
Yeah.
you.
I've changed a lot since I was 22.
Haven't we all, right?
Yeah.
No, but it's important. I think you've also created a body of work, and I think an interview is different if it's like, you know, some kind of inquisition or something. or we're discussing the art you make as an artist. You know what I'm saying? There can be a different level of that, not being like, when did you play your first guitar? What's your favorite? You know what I mean? This isn't Teen Beat, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And like we especially back then, we ran into a lot of interviews where they just thought we were a bunch of pretentious people because we were always talking about obscure foreign films and obscure non-metal releases and stuff. And it just we kind of got this reputation for being like this hoity-toity artistic pretentious band, but it was just honest. We were just being who we were, we were just telling it like it was. We weren't trying to be anything special or whatever. We were just being, we were just creating from the heart and expressing what we were into.
It does feel like you guys make like the almost ultimate apocalypse soundtracks ever, like some kind of dystopian world. Like, I hear a lot of people say they love to read and listen to your music. It's because it evokes such a power. Each, it's a journey of emotions. Is what it is. It's very much a soundscape of unfamiliar territory a lot. Still on each
Yeah,
album.
for sure. And we were more into expressing that than just being another metal band, for sure.
And each of your albums are different too. I mean, that's the other thing. Like, it's an Impale and Mantler. So remember, then you start going on, and you go, it totally goes kind of heavier. Then you go back, and it's like different. Do you feel now that you kind of, as long as you guys have been doing this, are kind of in that pocket now? Or you think because of your solo stuff, you can kind of do more? Like, I mean, do you feel like you've kind of been, oh, sorry, lack of words here. You can't go further without people questioning the band or your sound. Like, that's not who, you know what I mean? Because you guys started with your own sound. You get crap by fans, the classic lineup or the original album, my favorite album type of thing.
Well, I think that, because we have a history, a 20-year history of making records, and people are attached to those records, and then there's this 10, almost 10-year, nadir between that and us reforming. Sure. I mean, if we were to make another record, I mean, I think the microscope would be on us big time, but that wouldn't change how we would do things. 'Cause, we've never, we as a band, and this has been since the beginning, we as a band, we've always been a band that we would never make an album for the audience. We would make an album at the audience. Meaning, this is what you get, take it or leave it. We're not taking into consideration what people expect us to do. We just do what we do and we put it out there and see what happens. And if people hate it, whatever. But, so with that said, I mean, I think it would be fine for us to say if we wanted to make another record, we would, and we just do it the way we want to do it and see what happens, But
Oh,
there hasn't been really much discussion about that since we got back together.
now I would think naturally at some point, if you guys, you guys do, all you guys have such writing and, some leverage you got, I can't see it not evolving if everyone's kind of feeling good about it, that it not.
I mean, for the first time since probably, I don't know, God, probably since 2010, we're on the kind of on the same page musically. So,
Oh, wow.
and we're also older and we have different life experiences that we, have learned from and grown from. So yeah, I mean, if we did make another album, it would be a mature album done by people in their late 40s, but we would still have the spirit because our creative spirit has been the same no matter what we do. And you see that with like Sculptured's latest albums, and you see that with my solo stuff and Jason's stuff. We're very creative people, and when we get really involved in what we're doing, we go all in. We don't make music to make money or we don't, or whatever. We make music to make art. We're artists. So, in fact, with my solo stuff, I lose money every time I release an album, but it's a passion thing, so.
I think that's a big thing about your podcast. I don't make money on. I do it because I just love the artist, and I want to take my platform and say, here, this is a band I like. Give them a shot. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what today's about. This is a band I like. I'm a fan of you playing for a long time, your songs. Check the band. And I think it's important because it's true. And I think one of the great things about it is a lot of the artists that would be trying to chase that band thing, they had that one big album and then they're always trying to replicate it. eventually there's a failure. Maybe there's some bands that can do it. I can think of a band that's been that successful. The ones that succeed, that may have dips in the audience, an album that they wanted to do that they felt was the next step. And they take 15 more years before the next album comes out the fans think is the next album, which is fine because it's a natural progression to them. But if you're catering to them, you're never going to be second guessing yourself. You can be second guessing the audience. You're never going to win, you know?
I will say that when we were in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago, we did kind of have a little bit of a discussion about like if we made a record, what would we want to do? And Don laid down he laid down his decree, and it was basically we what I don't want to hear us do is an album that people expect. And that's I mean
I like
that's
that.
our attitude. And then my decree was, yeah, and I don't want, you know, I would never want to make an album that has a modern, super polished production. I don't want to use AI for the artwork. I want to use paintings. I want to use, and it's just a continuation of that attitude we've always had. So that hasn't changed with us, which is a good sign. So if we do decide to make another record, it would be a true, honest expression of who we are, where we are right now. And we still very much hold in high regard, you know, artists, you know, painters, real productions using tape, using, you know, real amps, you know, that kind of thing. Because that, you know, that's just been part of the fabric that we've always woven.
I think you guys have all kept up your shops, and now there's been a, so if you aren't following, there was a time where the band said after like 20 years you guys took a break from each other. It was a little bumpy.
Call it that.
I was like, huh?
It was one of
with
those kind of breaks, but
I was trying to do what the kids do, you know, taking a break. No, but so the band, had a bad break. A lot of good albums at the time, though. You guys were still cult, and I think almost that 10 years since then, and maybe because of it. Those became like legendary. So, A, number one, I think you do need to come back because a lot of the music scene is a big part of what you did. So, you should actually be enjoying some of the success of the scene you created. Fair, it's fair, it's fair because you're going to do it the right way. I agree. I love the artwork. I don't want you to be overproduced. And I love production. I love the production of your albums. I love the sounds. I love the fact that every album, I don't know, even if it's an album I don't like, I'm going to like the fact that you did it because you want to do it as an artist. I'm a fan of the band doing it. So you can still support the album, even if that's not your favorite one. You might go back in 5 years and like it, you know what I mean? So that I do think you guys should do it because you guys sound fantastic. And I think you're also at a point now where you guys can all do your other bands and projects without giving it up and doing an album. You guys have established yourself enough where you can kind of weave between do an album, do some solo, go on, take a break, like and give you guys some breathing room and date other people. So it's healthier. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
it certainly is.
And your attitude is great. And you guys, I've only seen clips online. You guys sound fantastic. Like, let's talk briefly with the Nexus and how you guys got the reunion. And then I want to go back into some of your solo stuff in that meantime and get caught up there. What got you guys back together though, after having some rough breakup to get back on stage? Everyone like lost their minds when they saw you guys were going to play like on the blue, you know?
It was kind of a it was a piecemeal process. You know, I had started talking to Don again in 2019, and then Jason and I finally rekindled our friendship around 2021. And you know, so we would just hang out as friends. It was great because we had all this history and we had all this success, but we could just kind of hang out as friends with that as in our past. As a, you know, whereas, you know, 25 years before that, we were in the same position, but we were hopeful. We were planning. We were trying to, you know, we had the future ahead of us. And now it's nice to, you know, I felt like kind of we had retired, but we could be friends and hang out. Well, anyway, so, you know, I was still working as a designer for the reissues. So every time Eisenwald would want to reissue something, I would have to redesign the thing, and you know, and it became a lot of work, especially redesigning the full discography, which I'm still working on. I don't know if you've seen the Pale Folklore reissue with the book and
I've
stuff,
seen
but
it
each
online. I haven't seen it in person, but I was about the website. We actually want to step in the design work too, because you do a lot of design. We can actually tie it in right now. know, it doesn't hurt to do extra work though too. Your other music is bringing in extra design work too. It might be a lot of work, but it's a lot of work you're doing.
So, I'm doing all this work and we'd hang out and it's just like, I think at one time, maybe it was in 2022, we were just having some drinks and I just said, I'd love to play shows again. If Agalloch wanted to play shows again, I'd do it. And Don like nearly fell out of his chair. He was like, really? He's like, me too. It was that kind of situation. So we just like, well, all right, let's, at the time I wasn't really on good terms with Aesop. So we decided to start fresh with a new drummer. And we tried out a local drummer. He didn't really work out. And then we had the idea of asking Hunter, who had already done some work for Don with Sculptured, and he's a very technical, very tight drummer. And he was totally into it. So from there, once we got his confirmation and we jammed with him, it was like, okay, well, maybe we should have a reunion show. And that's when it was shortly after that when Prophecy Productions offered us the headlining slot at Prophecy Fest in that cave. And of course, that was very interesting to us because here's the thing is one of the things that we had talked about is like, okay, if we do shows, we're not going to tour the world. We're just going to do maybe two or three shows a year at really unique, special places with or in exotic places that we've never played before. And we're going to do it like that, which I was totally fine with because we all have very busy personal lives and professional lives outside of the band. And so yeah, I mean, the fact that they were offering us to headline in this ancient cave was interesting. So we agreed to that. And then we wanted to also play a show in Portland. And so I always wanted to play the Crystal Ballroom with Agalloch, which is this historic, beautiful building,
I've seen
beautiful.
the concert of it too online. Someone did a pretty good job on YouTube. You guys sounded good. YouTube quality. It still sounded really good.
So we had those two shows and we were like, okay, that's great. And then we got the offer, of course, to play festivals. And we got the offer from Decibel, which came with some interesting perks that we decided that talked us into it. And then after that, we were just going to focus on maybe trying to play a couple of shows in 2024 in places we've never been. But then we got the offer to do the show at the Regency with Dawnbringer, who are old friends of ours. And of course, that was another interesting, thing for us because we're playing this Masonic temple in San Francisco. That's awesome. And I also had the opportunity to do my solo project live at this beautiful venue as well. So that all, so really what it boils down to is, if we get interesting offers, those are much more something that we would consider than say just playing on a Friday night at some box venue, in town. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it really what it is that it's a continuation of our artistic attitude that we have. So it's like, yeah, we're not making albums, but let's play interesting shows.
It
So
wouldn't hurt though if you get the payoff shows though. I mean, there's nothing wrong with an artist making money for the art. I feel something like we still have to have, we still have dental bills and stuff in life. Like, do you know what I mean? You
for
still have to pay
sure.
your bills. So there's something wrong with an artist getting a headlining gig somewhere and you finally getting paid for something that every other band has copied you since you guys have been on a break. You know what I mean?
But I mean, to some degree, I mean, we're those kind of weirdos that would like, if we had to choose between playing in front of 3,000 people in some stadium or playing in front of 500 people in some old historic church, we would
Oh,
choose the church. I
yeah.
mean,
I don't
that's
mean like that.
how
I'm
we
not
are.
meaning like sellout. I mean, but it's nice that you're getting some offers. So for a
Sure.
band nowadays to go out to go somewhere to fly out somewhere to do a gig, it's not like a huge world of money. The music world is the same. So if they're doing it, give you these nice offers to do this, you should get. I'm not saying make $1 million, but you should get these things. You should get paid and do a nice gig that you guys enjoy. Is what I'm saying. It's important, you know.
And what's really nice also is, when we decided this, the key thing that Don said was, the best time to do anything is when you don't have to. And none of us have to do this. So we're not depending on money. We're not depending on whatever. We're just enjoying playing music again and doing it maybe in some places that we've never played before and in countries we've never played before and cool venues and caves.
What about What about like some live like a live bootleg series or something? Because you guys are quite known to be quite a live band,
Well, I mean, in 2015, we actually professionally filmed and recorded
Right.
the show that we played in the Great American Music Hall, and that's going to get released sometime in the future. Probably, I'm thinking it's going to come out with the Serpent and the Sphere book because it makes sense. It was part of that tour.
Yeah.
But it's edited and ready to go. I mean, it's, but I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't mind maybe in the future if we have a cool situation, filming one of these shows again. And yeah.
You just as a fan because there, like I said, there's very few even interviews out there with you doing just a simple victim. Just like I said, there's a couple in-depth ones that people are able to know that scene at the interview, and if you know what I'm talking about, just really great. Great interviews you guys did. I can't think of the podcaster's name now. If you can think of it, or give him a shout out.
Are
You
you
said a
talking
podcast.
about Jeff?
It might have been. It might have been. You know,
Gas
you guys have
masks?
really, yes, you guys had some really great talks on that. So shout out to what was it called? Gas Mask and
Gas masks and hand grenades.
Gas Mask and Hand Grenades. Check it out. Shout out to them. But this is a little more. A beginner for some people that aren't aware of you and the band and kind of a crash course to get in. But I think the old one and something new though, because people are going to videotape you anyhow, which is great. I love when bands do it because I do it at times because it helps bring the fans love it. They still go see you. It doesn't hurt the band. But man, it wouldn't hurt if you guys to have your own live version of something new at this
Yeah,
point.
especially since the DVD that we do have from 2008 was really disappointing. I
Right.
mean,
I mean, you sound so different. I mean, the recording quality is a little different. It can get your sound more accurate. So, in the meantime, so when you guys broke up, obviously everyone had to do their own thing. You did solo, then you did you had good one or two bands. You did or two.
was in a band called Pelorian for a little while.
That was your big one, right? But then, and then you toured a lot with that one, and you.
Yeah, we actually within the course of a year we played over 100 shows. I mean, that was, yeah, we
Especially because of what you came from, was it just like
right.
aggression? Like you just considering you started your first band that was, you didn't want to do any touring or any play. You
I
don't
know.
want to do any play out. Now you're
Well,
touring.
I mean, that was after the Agalloch split, and that a lot of the contention between us was the fact that I wanted to play more shows and I wanted to tour more. I had changed. I had gone from this person who didn't want to do anything to now I want to tour the world. And Agalloch wasn't, the other guys weren't interested in that. And so what I should have done is started Pelorian as a side project and put Agalloch on hold. But I was also going through some mental shit at the time that kind of bit me in the ass later. but it also kind of drove what Pelorian was. Pelorian was a very volatile band. I mean, it was kind of like being in a punk band,
I hear fans have like different opinions of it. Some people are like, I love this, thank you. And then, of course, unfairly, they're like, there's only one Agalloch. Well, of course, it's not Agalloch. It's not a different name, different members. So how can you compare it to each other? You know what I'm saying? If you just, you always get the unfair comparisons. But the fans were like, mom and dad got divorced. We're not going to like his new stepdad. You know what I mean? It was just one of those things where, I think the music was good, but it was just a different band. It was
Well,
heavier, a little more aggressive, I think.
if you compare Pelorian to Agalloch, it's kind of like in terms of relationships, it's kind of like with Agalloch, I left a very steady marriage to go and date a whore who is like on drugs and angry. I mean, that's
God.
basically the difference between the
Ah.
two.
Right, you win. You the better you finish up.
But I mean that band was, I mean, we of course we got along great and we had a very we were all on the same page for a while, but it quickly unraveled with the attitudes and the just the volatile foundation that that band was built on. It just imploded itself. So, but
Too
it was
bad.
fun while it was.
Yeah. So, but at that point, you also, so we're putting this in here now. You do a lot of design work. So, at that time, and you've always been doing this, you've been doing design work while you were doing the band, and probably allows you to do your work and the band stuff, flexibility. That's kind of a career you can kind of do on your laptop anywhere.
I was doing that, and I was also working in a print shop where it was owned by musicians, so they understood touring, you know. And it's like we would print the t-shirts and then I would take those t-shirts on tour, you know, that type of thing. So that was also great.
So actually, let's talk about the creative side of that before we get into your solo stuff then. So all the design work you did, so on your web page, you actually, the link will be there for people. You've done a lot of things on the other side, the design side. I'm going to talk about that a little bit, and people actually can reach out to you if they have interest in it too.
I mean, you know, I mean, I have a bachelor's degree in design, in graphic design, and I've been working in that field for well over 20 years in various different places. I mean, I've worked for wineries, I've done full marketing campaigns for businesses and things like that, you know, outside of the music, you know. Obviously, I've done a lot of all the music design work for Agalloch and all my other bands, and I've done work for other bands as well, and I'm open to do it for other bands too. It's kind of a it's weird, you know, that industry keeps changing and keeps evolving, and you know, like AI is kind of shaking some things up a little bit with that, but it's a matter of, you know, just you just have to adapt and find your way to use those tools to work for you, instead of letting those tools letting those that technology
Right.
destroy you. So
But you did it like your own business, right, though? I mean, because you probably were a contract freelance. So you've
I
always been
was
your
yeah
always your own
well
boss. You creatively point yourself in those different
I
businesses,
did
right?
yeah I mean I ran Dammerung Arts. I was the curative director on that in that company for a while. I've worked for other companies. I worked for actually I worked recently I was a I worked in a cosmetics laboratory where I was doing a lot of dossier work, like designing dossiers. But yeah, so you know, I've done a lot of stuff outside of music in that field for sure.
Just,
You know.
yeah, but it's so from design though. So you'll actually go and design like soup to nuts for an artist coming in, or their ideas, or like if an artist wants to reach out to you, like what can you offer them as far as like, I know you can do a lot, like
I'm just
album
I
stuff.
mean at the most part, I mean, I listen to what they want and I'm easy to work with. That's really the basis of it. You know, we just
But you
take it
can do
from there.
CDs, shirts, you can design, just about anything. I'm
Oh,
trying to say, like,
yeah. I do
what are they,
everything.
what I'm saying, like a lot of people aren't aware of what a designist does, like.
And
My
I'm,
wife is a graphic designer, so I'm aware of that, so, but I want to put out there so her bands like, oh, really? A fan of yours, whatever, they want to get some work. Like, what can you do?
and I really love doing like special editions that are like crazy, you know, working with like wood boxes and
Okay.
engraving
I.e.,
and
one of your sets.
well, yeah, there you go. You know, I love those little details that you can have that you can still do in within the print world. And you probably see that if you have my solo albums. I've in it's that way as well. Yeah, I mean, sure, it's I can do any sort of media, you know. I don't really design websites and I'm not a programmer type of guy, but I'm more on that on the visual side of that technology.
Websites is hard. I think it's less creative at the most parts, the basics of it. I mean, it's just a different world, I think, almost two different
Yeah.
thought processes with that. So people, at his website, there's a contact spot, and you can just put your information and send it to him. The link will be there, but it's very easy to use the internet and type a name in nowadays. God
Yeah.
forbid you can't figure out how to do it, but the link will be there. So
Right.
that being said, you've been doing a lot of solo work, which
Yeah.
will lead to your thing. Now, your solo work is a little bit different than anything else you do. And
Yeah.
each album sounds pretty different too. I can't believe you keep going with a different sound between your solo stuff and that. Like each time I'm like, still sounds different. Like you're not running out of stuff yet in your bag of sounds.
No. I mean, a lot of it is stuff that, you know, especially when I was in an active band on the side, like Agalloch or Pelorian, you know, a lot of that material was stuff that I wouldn't be able to contribute to those bands per se.
Well,
I mean, I
yeah,
guess
some of sound.
some of it, okay, yeah, like there's parts on Cast Iron Blood that could have worked in the context of Agalloch because, you know, like on Shadow, there isn't an Ennio Morricone section that
Right.
we're in, but I wanted to really explore a certain aesthetic that I've always loved since I was a kid growing up in Montana. And that's that old West aesthetic. And I wanted to do it in a very contemporary way rather than just, cowboys and Indians kind of, whatever. So for me, it's like I wanted to explore the aesthetics of the Old West and do it in a way that's like, for instance, I'm not with my solo albums, this trilogy I'm working on, I'm not making country music. I'm not making, it's not metal. It's like an Ennio Morricone soundtrack done with loud amps and modern tools. With a sort of soundtrack kind of approach. So, and then and on top of all that, when I perform live, I have video that I've designed. I've got the whole outfit that I'm wearing, and everything is very impeccably designed for that project. I mean, down to the guitar that I'm using now is a custom-made guitar that's like
Really?
specifically for that project. So, yeah, I mean, so I'm just really, really exploring that aesthetic. And you've got bands like Wayfarer that are also doing that. They've kind of got that sort of Western theme black metal thing going on, and that's very cool. Souls to Fear, of course. And then of course a huge one for me was Fields in a Nephilim, which was basically spaghetti Western goth. So these are big influences, but also in addition to that, I was really influenced by Jim Jarmusch's film Dead Man, which
Yep,
Neil Young
that's why
was.
here, whenever I hear, there's a couple things here, and more on your soul stuff, even back from the earlier stuff, just in the sounds, it was less, more, you had some more wall of sound stuff going through. Because I'm
Yeah,
talking
and
about the
actually,
earlier solo stuff, and I was like, I always think of Dead Man, and when I first heard the album, Chinese Seven, I thought here, I first saw the album, I was like, I first saw it with the movie, I heard it, because I wasn't expecting it to be like that. At the time, you're seeing a Johnny Depp movie, a cowboy movie, I figured, oh, okay. I walked away, I was like, oh, I got a lot to think about. Like, the color, the way it was shot, the sound, the way sound was used, the words, it was the sounds and the sound effects were the script and emotion. And that was ill.
But I would also like to add though, the first album that of the trilogy, Last Place I Remember, was also heavily influenced not only by the Nevada desert, because I took a trip to Las Vegas one year and I just was really enamored by the desert, and we went to like Monument Valley, and we went to all these other places nearby. And but also another soundtrack that, or another movie that really inspired that was Richard Stanley's Hardware, which does have Carl McCoy from Fields of Nephilim as an actor in the movie.
Really?
And it's about this nomad in this apocalyptic desert wasteland.
I'm familiar with
And
this. I'll have to go back and listen to it now.
well, not so much the soundtrack, but just the movie itself,
The
just the
movie
vibe
itself,
of it.
okay.
The soundtrack was actually kind of gothic, industrial, but the movie is like really awesome. And it has that vibe that you really can, I don't know, it translates really well, like when you're in the middle of the desert in Nevada on a summer day and it's the sun is beating down on you, and it's got that same kind of like intensity that you would have in that environment. And that was very inspiring for me. So yeah, film plays a very strong role in a lot of the stuff that I do, not only Agalloch, but yeah, definitely
I think
solo.
you've always been at the right desk, like even back like German films, art films.
Yeah.
Early on in the discussion, you talk about people get confused and saying, "Oh, you guys are this," when
Yeah.
really you just, you have a finite opinion and a focus on certain type of films that aren't cultural. So if you're not the same, it can come off as,
Right.
being elitist if you just listen to the same thing.
Yeah. And the other thing, the influences that go into my solo stuff, it's not just limited to film, and it's not just limited to gothic music or whatever, but it's also influenced, I draw influence from Brian Eno and Steve Reich and even late period Talk Talk, Current 93, Coil. Coil is a huge influence on that stuff. And so to put that kind of experimental music within the context of this sort of like spaghetti Western imagery was a very interesting concept to me. So,
Is there a danger if you're doing a certain guitar riff, like because dark country is also a thing nowadays? I
yeah, I
think,
know. And I'm not, and I
which is
don't
better
consider
than
this a part of it.
not having it cool, because at least it's cool to have some more dark music. You know what I'm saying? But
Yeah.
the danger of you, because now there's more stuff similar.
And
I
yeah.
feel, and people would like to mush things together, not say that it's the same or different. So, the only danger is someone like, oh, you're trying to be this or that's that, when you're kind of doing your own thing. Are you
Yeah.
conscious of a certain lick or?
I am, and I've noticed that, just in the times since I've started doing the trilogy, which was in 2014, that's when I started this trilogy, that Old West thing has become very trendy in media, in bands. It's just like, back when I started my project and I started playing shows and I'm wearing the duster and the cowboy hat, I was laughed at. People were just like, oh, it's fucking stupid. Take that hat off, But now it's like part of this kind of growing trend that you're seeing. So
It's a
it's
money
almost
maker.
good in a way, but I mean, in a way, knowing the kind of person I am, I'm kind of glad that I've finished the third album in the trilogy so I can kind of move on. Because I kind of feel like it's like, all right, well, I've done my work here. I've left my mark in this style. Now I can do something else. But yeah, and so it is a little frustrating because when I first started that project, I was like, this is actually kind of a cool idea. Let's take Cormac McCarthy movies or take Cormac McCarthy quotes and put it to like this imagery and this like noisescape music and this Old West stuff and put it together, and it created something kind of interesting and fresh. But now I think if I were to come out with this project, people would just be like, ah, they're just ripping off this and that,
Possibly,
And
yeah.
I've actually gotten that. When I released the video for Scars Make It the Man, there were a few people that were just like, ah, he's just ripping off Soulstephir. And it's just like, no, I'm not. I'm not ripping off anyone, but I am influenced by the same people that Soulstephir are influenced by, Phils and Nephilim, Spaghetti Westerns, so I'm drawing from the same influences, just as Agalloch drew from the same influences that probably Opeth had. And we would get Opeth comparisons, but I've never been an Opeth fan. So it's like, but we draw from the same influences. So naturally you're going to have a lot of those similar elements.
I guess maybe sort of the same fan base, but I never heard of, I never thought of Opeth and you guys being similar.
Oh yeah,
Except.
we got that a lot back in the day, especially when Pale Folklore came out. We were called sort of a poor man's Opeth, and I'm just like, we're a poor man's In the Woods, if nothing else.
Oh, it sounds totally different. When you're writing, and you want to reproduce yourself now, is there, where is the point where getting lost in the music, because your music is not the same as a normal song framework. You know what I mean? The time signatures, the sounds, the ambient sounds go longer. So there's no measure, the measures, time measures. Like, so if you want to replicate it, are you just going by feel, the sound part, and then include your music with a little flexibility? Or can you actually in your mind, no, this runs this far? You know what I'm saying? Because it's a lot harder than having a normal song structure of like Back in Black, dun, 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 dun. You know what I'm saying? Like, but
Are
your
you
music is not like that. There's no structure.
referring to yeah, are you referring to Agalloch or my solo stuff?
No,
Which which
so mostly soul stuff, because I do think Agalloch has some, has more of a structure in it, especially in your soul stuff. Oh, it's really your soul stuff. When I listen to it, I'm like, I would get so confused if I had to play it back. Like, I couldn't listen to it and follow it, but I couldn't take you on the journey. Like, you know what I mean? I could walk with you on the journey, but I just couldn't show you how to get there on my own.
Yeah, I mean, the first album was based, it was recorded based on just loops and loop, and I would just loop style sounds and things like that. And that's how I played that stuff live. The second album, Cast Iron Blood, had a lot more of a rhythm section to it. And for that, I've developed some very, very sparse backing tracks that are connected to the video. So I just play, I mean, I've got a huge rig with loops and all this stuff, and I do vocals, but I'm playing to those backing tracks, and that's what keeps it grounded and allows me to replicate, say, a song like River of Iron that's on Cast Iron Blood. I can do that live. And if people want to criticize the fact that I'm playing with backing tracks, well, I just see it as I'm playing with the ghosts in the machine. I made those tracks. I'm
Well,
not
that's a
playing
little
with
different. That's not the same as a certain stadium tour where the singer's main job is to sing, and that's a little different. You know what I'm saying? This is a smaller thing. The music itself is created on a machine, so it's not even like it was the loops. Once you start it, you can press the button and start the loops. Already, nothing you can do to, you know what I mean, Yes,
Right.
it's, so you're
Well, I
just
mean,
playing along with it, and you found you created.
yeah. And people have asked me, it's like, well, why don't you just get a full band to recreate this music? And it's like, well, then that kind of takes away the point of a solo project. You
Right.
know, I want to do this by myself. I want to have it where I'm a one man kind of thing, and I can just, I,
All
if
your
I, if I need
success,
to,
all your
I can
failure.
just go somewhere. Yeah. Like with Agalloch, it was always dependent on the schedules of four people. With me, I can play a show at any time. You know, it's up to me. So, and I really liked that freedom. And after Agalloch disbanded, I actually flirted with the idea of just doing that full time and not doing another metal band. But yeah, anyway, so what I'm doing with it now, and in fact, there's somebody, I played a show last year at the Lunasa Cascadia Festival, and somebody actually filmed that show with three cameras and recently posted on YouTube. And that gives you a really good idea of the progression of what I'm doing now with that material versus
That up.
if you look at video from 2016 or whatever, it's very different.
It's interesting how you have the sound. So there is some kind of pre-setup sounds that you have clearly, because I'm thinking, I'm like, how's he going to replicate that? Because A, just to keep it all in your mind, if you're doing your show, you're doing the vocals, you're doing the guitar, you're doing everything else, how are you going to make the sounds and play along without getting, there's a lot. But then you have the fans that are like, that know the music better than the artists. That just gets, thrown up in a shed somewhere. Making a bomb. Like it's so much, like it's so intense that the artist is like, you gotta breathe a little bit. This is art and there's music and it's gonna be squeaky sounds and mistakes. It's called live music. You know what I'm saying? And but that's the spot where in a band like yours is like, the folky death metal, whatever they call you at this point, I don't even know. Like version of Rush, version of that. The thing is you have such a loyal fan base that the give and take is you have two sides of the fence,
And that's the great thing is also with Agalloch, you know, it's purely live. It's four guys playing that stuff. We don't use backing tracks. We don't use any special tricks. It's, and you can tell because we make lots of mistakes when we play live because our music's kind of hard to replicate.
But you're
But
supposed to. It's live. It's the best thing. You're breathing. You're
it's
living. It's
exactly.
great.
I saw Rush fuck up. And that was the greatest day of my life because it's like, wow, even those guys can like screw a song up. It was
I was at
great.
a concert with Eddie Van Halen's guitar string broke in the middle of a solo. They're
There you
like, if
go.
that happens, I'm like, well, it happened here, and I saw that. That was my solo. Awesome.
When Agalloch played in the Decibel Festival, we had the power went off at the front of the stage, and all of our pedal boards went off, and like our amps went off in the middle of a song, and we had to stop and
Holy
start
Spinal
over.
Tap. That's a Spinal Tap moment, pure and simple.
But it's also a reminder that, hey, people, this is live music, you know? So,
The power going is different than somebody's laptop going and the band can't play. So it's
Sure,
important
sure.
that they support that, you know what I'm
Yeah,
saying?
and certainly during my the few solo performances that I've done with my new setup, I have that concern. It's like, shit, what if my computer dies in the middle of this?
Well,
But
you could just be prepared to do a different version of it live and keep going. And that,
and I do have that
like a
actually.
stripped down version of your whatever version of a guitar and a sound, be like, let's just go live. We're just going to do
Well,
raw.
that's actually Don asked me that when I was getting ready to play, open the San Francisco show. He was just like, well, what if something goes wrong? And I'm like, I have a backup plan. And my backup plan is I just switch to playing stuff from the first album, which was purely loops. So if like say something happens and my backing tracks stop in the middle of River of Iron, I can make that merge into a track that's on the first album and do my best with it.
And the audience does that because you're not doing a milly-nilly situation where it's like it skips or whoever's singing it. Even those artists didn't want to do it, but the point is, people know you're doing that, so it's not like, "Oops, what? It's a fake." You're like, "Is equipment failure on the background sounds? Let's go to this now,"
And
which is
plus
cool.
it would be very obvious that something technically went wrong because not only would the backing track stop, but the video would stop too, because everything's connected to the video. So, and then yeah, just in that case, I would just switch over to something else from the first album and just finish my set.
And that's it. Yeah, we say make a mistake. If you play something wrong once, you do it a second time, so it's not a mistake anymore. You meant to do it type of deal.
Yeah, and I've done that a lot where it's like I'll purposely play the wrong note again just to make it sound like it was intentional. Yeah. I do
That's awesome.
that a lot in Agalloch.
So there's gonna be a balance now. All the band members at Agalloch obviously gonna keep their projects going. It's just healthy. And you're gonna do your solo. And we're gonna see dates appearing. Will the dates appear on the Agalloch thing and on your page for your solo stuff? Like, is it just check those two sites and probably the best keep up with it?
Yeah, and here's the other thing is, despite what people probably think of this, I'm kind of using Agalloch as a piggyback for my solo project because it's like the San Francisco show was kind of a tester for that. I was like, all right, I'm gonna see if I can, how I can do a double duty, because in 2015 in Europe, I actually had to do double duty with my solo project and Agalloch because our opening band canceled the first week. And I was basically just thrown on as a last minute thing, and I prepared a set for that for those shows, but it was very stripped down. But now it's like I've got a much bigger production going on with my solo work, so, and I've got it dialed in, so I'm fully prepared to, like, say, open an Agalloch show. As long as there's a band between me and Agalloch, it's perfect. And I'm going to probably start doing that a lot more. We've been talking about doing some shows at some places. Can't really talk about it right now, but this year and next year, and in every discussion, I'm like, I want to have my solo thing open. And
Are the guys in the band okay with that?
oh, absolutely. And in fact, we've been talking about playing Japan, and I told Jason, I was like, you know what, Japan would probably be better suited for your Moonbladder project because there's a big noise scene there. But they would probably also like what I do because what I do is also kooky and different, bizarre. So, if it comes down to having to trade off with Jason, I'm fine with that too.
There's nothing wrong with you guys. You guys created this thing, and then actually even despite or in spite of, they got even bigger because of this, and you guys actually grew. So, the point is, why should you guys not feed off that success? I mean, would you?
Yeah.
We know who Sting was. If he wasn't in the Police, we arguably may not have gotten the same chance. Like, did he write all the biggest hits? Was he probably the de facto one who wrote most of the big hits and continued solo? Yeah. Are you a big part of the writing in Agalloch in and out a solo? Yeah. So like, it's not like it's a different thing. Like you're becoming a pop star. You know what I'm saying? It's not like it's different.
Right.
It's just an extension of you. And why should you not be tied to what you did? It's who you are. You're both.
Right. And there's no ego struggle in this band. If Jason wants to open an Agalloch show with Moonbladder and it means maybe I don't get to open that show, that's fine. Well,
It's
I
not
get
like you guys
it.
are going out doing solo stuff like, John's version like Agalloch and doing like covers versions of Agalloch. You know what I'm saying? So
Oh
it's like,
God, no. I
no,
would I,
actually,
no.
have you ever seen a cover band do Agalloch? I
Yeah.
haven't.
I did actually. I saw one video of a band playing, I think it was Limbs, and they did it better than we do. I mean, it sounded like the album. Like they really put a lot of effort into it to make it sound perfect. But, we're a band that likes to mix things up when we play live. We don't want to just replicate
That's
the
gotta be
album.
pretty flattering to see that though, to see, because I mean, you're not the kind of
Yeah,
band where you're gonna
they
see
put
like
a lot of work into it.
35 tutorials of an Agalloch song. You know what I'm saying? There's
Yeah.
not a lot out there, so it's very special.
Right. Yeah.
The new solo album, when can we be looking for that? The fans be looking.
I'm hoping late April. I will announce when I know.
Roughly, just so people have an idea. Okay.
Yeah, it's gonna be probably late April.
Full album.
Hopefully.
Because I know in
Full
Agalloch,
album.
because sometimes you guys like to sneak out EPs too. So in Agalloch, so I just want to make,
No, this and this my next solo album is it's the third in the trilogy, so
right.
it's
Full
kind
album.
of finalize. Yeah, it's gonna be a full album. The CD will be 45 minutes. The LP will probably be about 41 because there's a bonus track on the CD.
So at this point, I have to say, so if you have it done and you're at the point there, that's final. You're probably working on new solo stuff. Are you already working on a new sound? Has like a new sound already started to evolve with you?
Well, I'd like to continue this solo project to some extent.
But the
Finishing the
sound, the thing you do the trilogy, like, are you kind of evolving to a different sound now? Because that was a trilogy.
I mean, I need to do something different because I've been so stuck in this like old West sort of aesthetic for about 10 years now, and then it's just like it's nice to finish the trilogy and wipe the slate clean and try some other things. Maybe I might do a collaboration with someone, or I might just do some completely different project, or fuck, maybe Agalloch will make an album. I don't know. But But yeah, I would like to do some shows, do a lot more shows with the solo project, and maybe do some live recordings that I could then like chop up and do something interesting with and make some releases out of that. Right now I just finished the album, so I'm not really looking that far into the future right now. I'm just,
Sometimes artists are like, I'll be talking to somebody and they'll be like, you talk about that album? And they're like, I'm already halfway through my next album. I haven't even heard that album since like last year. But you know what I'm
No.
saying? Like, that's how artists are when they're recording. I'm like, oh wow, okay, well I'm still here right now with you. And the rest of the world hasn't heard it besides me. So
Yeah,
in here.
I'm somebody who, once I've spent 2 years or something working on an album, once I'm done with it, I kind of want to take a break for a year from creating. I'd rather like play shows or do something else, anything else. And then
I
that
think
way
solo
I
and
can.
an ad lock and a solo would be great, for fans and for you.
Well, that was originally a thought I had. Yeah.
It
We'll see.
allows a flexibility. So,
Right.
thank you, man. This has been fantastic. Thanks for sharing all this stuff.
Oh,
And
yeah. Thanks for having me. I
well,
don't do
well.
many of these, so it's kind of fun to talk about this stuff.
Well, I don't think everyone always talks about the same things too. So, I mean, obviously, you're lucky on the other podcast too. He really gets kind of deep too. It's kind of special to I like to go off the sidetracks and talk about songs. These are like questions, a lot of questions I have, but I wanted to formulate it in a way that I want you to have newer fans. And I will be honest with people. Some of the albums might seem more abrasive than others. Your music can be darn right abrasive, and then the next second, it's so freaking beautiful. And that can be with both of them. Your soul stuff can be very eclectic and be very even more soundscapey. Agalloch has different, each album sounds very different, so you might find one or two good albums. I mean, the early ones for me were great, and then Faustine, I was like, oh, this is my brilliant favorite album. You know what I'm saying? It depends. And then a couple years later, I'm like, oh, I can get into this album now, and now I've been listening to the last the re-release you guys just did of what's up, it came out in 2019.
No, Pelvoco.
Yeah. After looking at it again. No, it was something else you guys just did. With
Oh, stop.
the
Oh,
white
the
bit.
white. Yeah.
Really loving that. Really
Oh,
loving
yeah.
the extended. It's really great. Actually, that's probably a good starting spot for some people to go backwards, because that album is maybe more consumer friendly, some of the tracks. If you're looking to
Well,
start,
the funny story about the white EP was that was initially started as a neo folk solo project that I was working on, and I wrote two songs for that, which were Pantheist and Swillaroon. And then it was during a time when Agalloch was taking a break, and this was like what, 2007, I guess. And so I was wanting to do a solo. That was the first time I wanted to do a solo release, and and then we just Don and I started talking about, doing another Agalloch album, and he had some acoustic stuff, and we just decided to merge it as an Agalloch album instead. But I mean, if you think about it, the Gray EP, the White EP, Faustine Echoes, to some extent of Stone and Pillar, those EPs were often, they were kind of studies, they were experiments in a way that, and they filled a gap that my solo stuff later on filled, or they there was a gap there that was that, in our discography, it's like we could take a break from playing like, our long-winded metal albums, and we could just do an acoustic album. Whereas nowadays it's like, I mean, granted, Agalloch's not making albums right now, but if they were, my solo stuff would still act as a side diversion for me to do something completely outside of the main band. And I actually really like that. And I think Jason, his solo stuff has been that way too.
I think it's a healthy way to go.
It is.
The fans, I'm thinking Hell Folklore was probably the first, the Mantle of the two albums that really got me going. But then, I just go in, people. First off, I just want to say, if you listen to them, you're not going to hear a normal album, a normal song phrase. It's an experience. So just be committed. Not going to be like, I don't know, focusing. You have to be like rocking out to it in a certain way. It's not going to be like, you want to pump your fist in the air when you're driving somewhere. You got to be ready to be open, like you're going to see a movie. Your mind's got to be committed to be open. And then once you're open to it, you'll feel natural driving in the car. Listen to what I'm saying, but your first time, you can be like, what the? It's just not what you usually hear on the radio. So you have your mind go in there, and if you don't like the song, skip to the next song because there's going to be a different song. It's like the weather in Seattle. You don't like it? Wait 5 seconds. Each
Right.
song's going to have a different layer to it. Each album's going to have a different layer to it. So skip through them. You might have an album you like now, and next year you might like it. There's a lot out there. So don't just say, I heard one song and I don't like it. I'm just saying because I don't think this would be a fair for a fan to listen to music and cut themselves short of just assuming one song is the sound of you guys, because I couldn't pick a song that would represent you guys really.
Yeah, and it's funny that I like how you say that it's kind of like watching a movie because all of our albums to some degree have been inspired by a certain style of film. Like Pale Folklore, I was really heavily influenced by the movie Never Cry Wolf, which is a movie I loved when I was a kid, and it has this really awesome like winter vibe to it, and it's kind of depressing and stuff. So I was really influenced by that movie when I was writing that album, and then The Mantle was very influenced by Bergman. Marrow of the Spirit was heavily influenced by Bellatar. Serpent in the Sphere was heavily influenced by Lars von Trier's Melancholia. We often, when Agalloch writes an album, we try to sort of approach it like it's a film, or like, well, what movie would this be, and what director would this album be? So,
Well, it definitely is, you need to go into it with a different mindset, and it's this genre of music to begin with. But it's very important that people that don't think like that take a break, and you're going to want to listen to it probably with headphones, or earbuds, or whatever ear device you got. Two metal cans together with a string, if you have to, whatever you do. But whatever it is, you want to or a good sound system because there's a lot going on. There's a lot of weaving, sounds and frequencies in it. It's not just. Because if you play it flat and something small, it's just going to sound like it's not. You're not going to get it. It's just not going to sound the same. You really need to hear it with a good definition of the sound because it adds the flavors and the spices to the music. And I'm saying this so you don't want anybody to be ripped off and not hear like, one thing off an iPad, but a speaker, that little thing like, I like this. You really need to listen to it and absorb it.
In the
So,
dark.
in the dark, not to be a
Headphones
devil.
headphones in the dark.
Well, yeah, I
Or
mean. Like a Pink Floyd album, like a Pink Floyd album. You gotta really be like, want to take a commitment to it,
another thing though is I've always liked to make albums that make that were good driving albums. If I've often taken some of like recently I took one of my solo albums out to the desert to tr see what it's like while driving through the desert, and it works out perfectly. Same with P Pale Folklore. When we finished the record, we drove to Mount Hood in the winter, and was we were driving along in the wilderness while listening to Pale Folklore, just to make sure that the aesthetic was right.
I can see
So
that. I can see that because I do drive to it, but I'm saying I think people just got to be aware of what you're getting into. Like Pink Floyd, you're not going to, you want to rock out, you're not going to put the wall on or something. Like you got to know that you're in a mood to drive. You're going to commit to it. So I like it because it's almost like it's very ambient. But I feel like empathy is a good word for a lot of music because you don't feel, like melancholy. I think melancholy is a really good word because you don't feel sad or too happy. You kind of feel like it's just emotions and a lot of the music. You know what I mean? Aggressive and happiness and which is overall a melancholic feeling, but
For sure.
there's a lot of music for you guys to dig into, everybody to check out. And I say guys, I mean everybody. And check it out and then reach out and watch for John's release. Go back to his other stuff. And his stuff is just as eclectic, even more so probably. Even more soundscapey than Agalloch, which is fantastic, There
Yeah,
is
I
a huge
mean,
difference there, so there's something for everybody, I think, in all your music, though.
yeah, I mean, on the new on my new solo album, the first song on it is a 19 and a half minute long piece done only on cello, harmonium, and piano. So,
And that's a small audience that likes songs like that. I like long songs. I like if I hear like it's your other album, you're like it's like one song, singles like 19, 20 minutes. You're listening just as listen to. Perfect. It's you know what I mean? It's a commitment to the, it's a theme. You're following the thought. So it's not jumping around. Thanks, man. I'm glad you came on the show. This has been really fun with me. We'll have to